Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's on the line. Hey, Carl.
Hi, Fred.
Yeah, starting off this morning, we're comparing weather, and it's one of my great joys of being on the West Coast in California and calling people in the snow belt this time of year.
You know, fortunately, we have a nice furnace and everything's warm inside.
There you go. Yeah, and it sounds like winter's arrived in force. So good for you. I don't know that I have a snow shovel, and I'm glad I don't. I don't miss that part of living out in the snow. It has plenty of great features, right? Kids love it. It makes everything beautiful, and when there's fresh snow, and there's a lot of winter sports that it facilitates. But when you got to work and drive in it, it's not all that much fun.
That's right. Boy, I've been doing way too much shoveling the last week.
It's good exercise.
Yes, it is.
That's right. So what did you have in mind today? We chatted about a couple different things. What's on your mind?
Here's what I'm thinking, Fred, and we've talked about this subject a little bit on different podcasts, but I'd kind of like to put it together. And I was thinking this morning of what would be really interesting to listeners. And I know from my perspective, enhancing the reliability career is a really important topic. And when I'm at RAMS talking with people and at ARS talking with people, career advancement is always on people's minds. And so I thought if you and I could summarize some of the enablers and the suggestions that we have for people's careers in reliability, that'd be an interesting subject. And as we've talked about before, I'd love to hear from listeners on what they think could be done or should be done to enhance their personal careers or suggestions for others. So that's the topic, and maybe we could break it into two parts.
Okay. Yeah, it certainly is a larger topic. And as you're mentioning, the asking our listeners is, you know, is if folks are listening, if you have any forehead slapping moments where it's kind of, well, I wish I didn't do that, that might be also a good list to create, is to items to avoid that would...
Yeah, things to not do, yes. Indeed.
That's right.
Got a few of those.
Yeah, it's certainly here too. But one of the things, and it's a question we get once in a while through the different forums, and I agree with you in talking at conferences we hear it, is, you know, some people are, they want to be a reliability engineer and they go to school, they go to University of Maryland or one of the other campuses and they get a degree in reliability engineering. Or their boss says, hey, you know, Carl, you're the reliability engineer now. Whatever the path is, you know, the first couple of weeks in any new position, in any role, is often beset with lots of learning and learning the product, learning the people, learning the systems that are there, finding out all the different pieces to get going. But once you're in a role for, say, a couple of months or 6 months or so, and you're settling into being a reliability engineer, that's an interesting question. What should they do to make sure that they have a successful career? And your word enabling intrigued me. Is there sets of tools, or is it more of a mindset kind of thing, is what you're thinking?
There are sets of tools. There are books, articles, websites that talk about career advancement. If you Googled career advancement, you get a ton of information on this. A lot of this has to do with whether a person is what I'll call a self-starter, or they tend to motivate themselves, or whether they're a little more laid back. There's different aspects to getting started, but let's just open up a few possibilities here.
Right.
In my mind, there's a subject of skills, And there's the hard skills of reliability. There's the softer skills of people interaction. But the whole subject of skills is important. And I would suggest that people spend some amount of time improving their skills on a regular basis. Reliability is not a topic that is static. It advances. There's new information. There's breakthroughs that occur from time to time. So I think it's important for people to always have an eye on improving their skills. If they have a master's degree, that's great, but you can also take additional courses, read books, go to conferences, things like that. So one of the enablers is that skill improvement, or always having an eye on improving your personal skills.
I'm going to plug the Ascendo Reliability site is kind of a place to find articles and podcasts like this and listings of calendar events and webinars and meetings and all those good things. So professional development is an ongoing piece. I would add to that, Carl, is that it's as you're getting started, you may or may not know all the various tools like FMEA or HALT testing is for a couple of examples. But even in statistics, there's applications for hypothesis tests and design of experiments. So it's, I think part of this is being aware of the various tools, and that's where reading and conferences come in handy. But it's practicing it. It's actually trying it. It's actually saying, hey, that's an application for a design of experiments. Let me learn it and try it and see how it works and gain that experience. I think the ability to fit the right tool or right technique at the right circumstance takes experience. And I personally believe the best way to do that is just try it. Just, you know, go for it.
Yeah. Absolutely, Fred. And I agree. The awareness of all the different types of tools, I think, is important. I've met a lot of people that are really good at one or two tools, mm-hmm. and they focus their careers on one or two tools. They become experts in FMEA, or they become experts in HALT or some particular aspect. I think it's important to balance. I think you need both a wide understanding or a broad understanding of all the different tools of reliability, and as well as being an expert in one or two areas. I think you got to go both directions. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a jack of all trades, but not have a expertise.
Master of none.
Master of none. Yeah, exactly. So that's part of the balance that I'd be looking for.
Well, early in your career, though, you may not know if you want to get into, say, accelerated testing consulting, or if you want to be a specialist in failure analysis, or one of the many, many different venues or branches of reliability engineering. It's more adapting to what's your local circumstance. Where can you add the most value? I think there's part of just the general nature of reliability engineering and being aware of the tools, but put those tools to good effect locally. You know, make your boss look good. I think that's general advice for any career.
Yes, it is.
Add value to the organization. If you're going to propose, I always remember your first reliability plan you put together, Carl, you talked about in our tutorial at RAMS, is have a reason why you're going to run a particular test or activity or investment of some sort in reliability. But start focusing on how what you're doing as a reliability engineer is useful, is beneficial, and have a good firm grasp of that.
Yeah, that's good advice. The way I look at it is there's a balance. And when I talk with my children and grandchildren and other family members about careers, I always balance personal interests, things that you're passionate about, gets you excited, with what the needs are of a company or needs are of industry. You don't want to go too far one or the other. You could go totally into what the needs are and end up in something you dislike. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you could get, I have some relatives that and some friends that have gotten into fields that are really interesting, like archaeology, but don't have the same career potential. And so you want to balance, now in reliability, you want to balance what excites you, what interests you, your personal passions with what the needs of the company are. And that's a changing landscape. So I think you always want to keep those somewhat balanced.
Well, it's, yeah, well, usually you'll end in a whole series of constraints. If I think my first accelerated life test was something, oh, this is fascinating. And I was planning like a 3-year study. And my boss says, no, wait a minute. We need to have this done in 6 months. You know, that's the reality kind of takes away the funding. And that's where I was wondering, it's part of when you're getting started, is that balance piece, but it's also the looking for those opportunities to grow a little bit. I think if we had a job that let us do whatever we wanted, there'd be little friction. There'd be little incentive to get out of your comfort zone and to learn something new. You know, if I had 3 years to do that accelerated test, I would have done my first plan and I wouldn't have learned about other techniques. It ended up being a degradation test instead. And I learned about a whole nother branch of accelerated testing. So it's one of the things I like about the reliability engineering. And I think it's true of many careers and many different opportunities, is that you can always be learning. But until you're nudged out of your comfort zone, there's not, unless you're a self-starter, of course, it's hard to always. I'm struggling with it because it is a balance. I love the learning part of what we do, and I can't do that all day. I have to actually do something useful.
You're right. You have to time manage to some degree. I think the learning and the advancement is a time management issue. I like to spend, on my own personal career, I like to spend a certain portion of my time each day, each week, each month on learning, mm-hmm. and then a larger portion of my time on doing. And so there, if you can time manage that way, then you're going to make progress. And sometimes the progress is in fits and starts. Like you alluded to, you have certain schedules, and you may have to go flat out for a few weeks, but then switch it back and find some way to do some advancement. I'd like to build off of what you said, Fred, about the moving out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. If there's any advice I could give people that is most meaningful personally, in other words, that has helped me the most, it's to constantly try to move out of your comfort zone. It's so easy to stay in what you're used to. For example, I have some young reliability engineers years back that were really good at statistics. Mm-hmm. They had lots of statistics classes in college, so they were constantly seeking out projects in statistics, reliability statistics. And I tried to balance them. I kept saying, look, it's good to be able to calculate and to perform statistics, but you also have to carry forward projects and design for reliability and understand science-based reliability. And I tried to move them out of their comfort zone at all times. And they would have done better had they had some of that initiative themselves. Mm-hmm. Didn't need to be prodded. So I think one of the gauges that people can think about is, or one of the dials is, Where is my comfort zone, and how can I move outside of it to advance my career at least some of the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good piece of advice. It's when you're considering a new position within your own organization or with a new company, there's a lot of unknowns. And if you're not a little bit nervous about it, it's probably not a good opportunity to learn and to continue to advance your career. Now, Carl, there's another aspect of getting started, though, is building that foundation of your career. And you touched on it just briefly with improving your soft skills, which includes interactions and presentations and the ability to communicate and so on. I think one part that I find some engineers miss is that they think they have to do it all themselves. in the ability to teach and coach and mentor and delegate reliability activities in particular is good for the program, is good for your company, is you're distributing the reliability capability across the organization. But it also helps you avoid getting burned out if you're trying to do everything yourself.
Yeah, there's a whole dimension to that, and I agree with you. And the dimension that we're talking about is that the softer skills of moving out into teams, mm-hmm. and being able to work with teams. I had a gentleman who worked for me that was really, really good working by himself, and had difficulty working with teams. And I took that on as a mentoring coaching challenge to myself as supervisor to work with them, get them into certain courses and training environments, put them into situations that required them to interact with teams. In other words, an ongoing career development on going out of their personal comfort zone to work with teams. That was very helpful to that person, and I still stay in touch with them to this day, and their career has gone very well. It's the type of energy and motivation that I would like to see people do on their own.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a stereotype. I'm thinking of the Dilbert cartoon is kind of the shy nerd kind of persona is, I don't know if it's that kind of people tend to go into engineering or if, and I'm sure I'm grossly waving a generality here, but reliability really doesn't work well if you're just in your heads down on your own desk doing your own calculations. It really does matter how well you can influence other people. And I think that's critical as a role of a reliability professional.
It really is. You've hit the right word. That's the word that I was thinking of also, is influence. If you're into the type of work, if you're looking for the kind of work that you can do entirely on your own in a cubicle, possibly reliability engineering isn't the right career. Because in order to design reliable products or reliable manufacturing processes, you have to be able to influence other people. You really have to be able to work on teams. You need to be able to interact. You need to understand what others' needs are and how to interact with them. So there's the social or softer skills are a balance. I think people, to be successful in reliability, need both very good technical skills and good social and interaction skills. And that does not come easy, particularly for engineers tend to be more on the introvert side. I mean, there are lots of extroverted engineers, but introvert, I think probably more so than some other, like if you're in business, mm-hmm. careers,
mm-hmm. or marketing,
marketing
exactly. Sales.
Yeah, sales. So in engineering and science, you tend to be more introverted, and in terms of representation, and an introvert is not a pejorative. The introverts are some of the most successful people in the world, and it does not mean that you cannot be more successful than an extrovert. I don't think there's any statement there, mm-mm. but it does mean that an introvert needs to learn how to interact more, because it doesn't come necessarily as naturally. The introvert tends to think more before they act, which is a real positive when it comes to engineering. But in order to be successful in reliability engineering, like you said, Fred, you need to be able to influence people. So that's part of the stepping out of the comfort zone, is to put yourself in the position of talking in front of groups, put yourself in the position of consulting with other engineers, constantly push yourself towards that edge.
It goes beyond that. I think one way you can tell if you need more hard skills or soft skills, or which areas you should focus in, is is which one makes you nervous. You know, if the boss says, hey, we need you to do a presentation at our next staff meeting, if that gives you butterflies, and if you're not real happy about doing that and you'd rather just send in a report, well, that's the area for your professional development. I think that's one judge for it. And then the other one is talk to Carl. Carl seems to be a natural mentor. Get you going. or your local Carl, and find somebody that can look at what you're good at, what you need improvement on, and help you develop your professional development plan. Now, Carl, I got one more question for you on this as we wrap this one up. Is do you have a short list of books that you would recommend for a junior reliability engineer as they're getting started?
I will put a list of books on the show notes for this episode. I do have some. I don't want to misspeak them or the authors, and so I'd like to put a little bit of thought to that. That's a really good question, Fred. So I'll include a list of books on show notes. And let me just comment one more comment, and maybe then we'll wrap up the part one to this. But I think it's important to seek out a mentor. The best career advancements I've had in my lengthy career is when I've had a good mentor. And some people think of that as, gosh, I'm lucky I have a good mentor. But there's a lot of literature and articles about the importance of seeking out a mentor, finding someone in your company that will take on the role. Ask them to take on that special role. Most executives and people in management enjoy mentoring people. Mm-hmm. That gives them personal satisfaction. So it is a win-win if you can find a good mentor that helps lift you up and helps give you advice, gets you in the situations that maybe stretch your comfort into the right kinds of situations that really advance your career.
I agree. So there's really three parts then, I think, is the skill improvement part, in with an emphasis, I think, we underline the soft skills and working with teams and delegating and teaching others about reliability tools and techniques. And then the third part is find a mentor, you know, somebody to help you navigate building your career, and somebody you can talk to about, well, where do you want to be in 5 years kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's not just an interview question. It's a real life scenario. Is if you don't start setting out what you want to do when you grow up, you're probably not going to get there. And so I think we missed that at the start. Although I think it's hard. Within the first couple of years, I had no idea. I didn't even know I was working as a reliability engineer. I was handed a variety of tasks and eventually recognized it as, oh, I'm a reliability engineer. I want to grow as an engineer in this field. And so all of these things we did in our day, Carl, it was books and going to a conference. Today, there's so many more options. And so as you're thinking about that, and we'll have the show notes with some recommended reading there, well, let's open it up to the listeners. And what would you recommend? What would be your gift to a junior engineer as a book title? What would you recommend? And then why? Add in the comments why you would recommend that one. I think it would be interesting to see if there's some consensus there. So you can find the show over at reliability.fm and underneath Speaking of Reliability. And I draw in a complete blank of what episode number this is, Carl, but I think we're approaching 200, believe it or not.
I've seen this morning I saw 179 that was on the website, and I'm sure there are some in the queue.
There's a few in the queue. Yeah, so we're getting close. I've actually been getting some nice feedback from folks. And so that's the other piece. If you're listening and you'd like us to talk about a particular topic, or you have something to contribute on this topic, or you just want to say, hey, that you're listening, it's kind of like radio where it just goes out and we don't see the audience, but we'd love to hear from you and hear what you have in mind and what you'd like to talk about. So let's wrap it up there, Carl. I think the idea, the topic has got my head spinning. So I'm looking forward to chatting some more about this topic.
Yeah, so am I. Very good.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.